Welcome to the Cybersecurity Readiness Podcast Series with Dr. Dave Chatterjee. Dr. Chatterjee is the author of the book Cybersecurity Readiness, a Holistic and High-Performance Approach, a Sage publication. He has been studying cybersecurity for over a decade, authored and edited scholarly papers, delivered talks, conducted webinars and workshops, consulted with companies, and served on a cybersecurity SWAT team with chief information security officers. Dr. Chatterjee is Associate Professor of Management Information Systems at the Terry College of Business, the University of Georgia. As a Duke University visiting scholar, Dr. Chatterjee is taught in the Master of Engineering and Cybersecurity program at the Pratt School of Engineering.
Hello, everyone. I'm delighted to welcome you to this episode of the Cybersecurity Readiness Podcast Series. Developing and maintaining resilient and secure data centers is a huge part of cybersecurity readiness. I'm honored to have Spyros Liolis, Chief Technologist and Managing Consultant, EVP Mission Critical Facilities, part of Ramble, to discuss the challenges and best practices of creating and maintaining state-of-the-art data centers. Spyros, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks so much. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to be in this great podcast series.
So Spyros, I would like you to tell me how I should pronounce your name properly.
I believe you got it right. Spyros Liolis is the right pronunciation. So we're good there.
Fantastic. Well, let's go forward with it then and share with listeners some of your professional journey highlights.
Oh, absolutely. So I am a mechanical engineer by heart and by degree, as I say, and a senior data center architect with probably close to 25 years of experience in the greater data center design, implementation, commissioning, operations. And I have done data centers in pretty much over 50 countries around the world. I have worked with very large enterprise companies, hyperscalers, colocation providers, and I have collaborated with almost every leading electrical and mechanical equipment company from the traditional vendors or legacy vendors, as we call them, Schneider Electric, Vertiv, ABB, and of course, some of the more the newcomers in the industry, which are companies that they focus on other specialty solutions such as liquid cooling, including Submer, LiquidStack, and many more. I've been living in the United States for the last almost 10 years now, and my previous career was in Europe, Middle East, and Africa.
Fantastic. You have a very, very impressive bio, and I'm honored to have you on the podcast. So Spyros, you know, the word data center is always in use when we are talking about anything technology, because at the heart of technological innovation, technological operations are the data centers. So therefore, it goes without saying that having a secure and resilient data center or data centers is mission critical. However, you know, I've done 61 episodes, haven't had a chance to really probe into what it takes to develop, design state-of-the-art data center, what it takes to make it really resilient from different types of attacks. So I'm thrilled that we get to do that today. So to set the stage for the discussion, should we review what data center resiliency means?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's before we actually do talk about the data center resilience itself, we need to express how paramount data centers are today in everything we do, our work, our social life, everything that we practically do today as professionals are or as consumers is relying heavily on a data center. The fact that we communicate right now is, you know, there is a data center supporting the whole infrastructure to do so. The fact that we are using social media technologies is again supported by some sort of a data center. The fact that we have connected vehicles, the fact that we have connected cars, automation, robotics, all of that practically relies on a data center infrastructure. So everything that we do is practically heavily relying on a data center infrastructure. And the one thing that I also explain is, yeah, what about the cloud, right? I mean, there's a cloud, of course, but nothing up there in the 35,000 feet above the ground is hosting servers. The cloud is practically data centers on Earth, right? So Even the cloud is actually data centers somewhere located pretty much around the world. So you're right. And the fact that it has become so critical in the way we do our business, we need to start talking more and more about what is it that we mean by secure and resilient. And practically, we refer to the ability of essential data center infrastructure to withstand and recover from disruptions and ensuring their continued operations. And when we talk about potentially threats or the disruptions we talked about, we need to think of them in terms of geological, meteorological, accidental, or even intentional risks. These are primarily the areas where we talk about when it comes to the data center resiliency.
Absolutely. And thank you for that, for emphasizing the significance and importance of data centers and how it impacts our life, our work. In fact, that reminds me of a little story. In the 80s, Harvard Business Review came out with an article titled, Does IT Matter? IT stands for information technology. And essentially, the theme of the article was information technology is a commodity. People can go and, organizations can go and just buy it off the store. It is unlikely to be a source of strategic advantage. So that article led to a furious debate where there were people speaking in favor of IT being a commodity, and then there were others who were saying that's not true, IT can be leveraged for strategic advantage. So as I was reading through that discussion, one particular comment caught my attention. The person said, we can end this debate right now. All that you have to do is go and shut down the data centers and see what happens to a company's operations. It'll come to a screeching halt. And that will prove beyond doubt, beyond reasonable doubt, that data centers are absolutely essential for operations, especially today, where we are increasingly digitized in everything that we do.
I think many people actually confuse the word commodity versus critical. And I think it can be both. I mean, yeah, everything that we practically use today, our phones have become commodity, right? Our vehicles are a commodity, and they're always connected, in some way, shape, or form to the internet, right? So it can be both a commodity, and of course, it can be absolutely critical. And the data center fulfills both both of these requirements. So we must absolutely have them in operational. You cannot plug them. Colleagues and I always discuss, the moment you power up a data center, you practically cannot shut it down. Okay, that's it.
Interesting. So Spiros, when I was doing my research on data resiliency, that how data centers become resilient, they were talking about server redundancy, co-location, critical services, but you are the expert. So what makes for a resilient data center?
We need to look at the data center beyond just what hosts the IT, right? Because people usually get the idea of a data center being the white space. But the white space is only functional when you have enough critical infrastructure, as we call it, to support the IT, right? That includes the entire electrical gear, anything from transformers, switchgear, UPS systems, battery systems, and the feed of energy, the feed of the electricity itself, right? So that is one element. The second one is, of course, the cooling side, the mechanical, as we call it. So everything that is, whether it's air, traditional air cooling, whether we're using modern technologies as liquid cooling, this also is absolutely paramount to the operation of the data center. We need to look at elements to control risks like fire prevention and detection. We need to look at the people who actually operate these facilities, so the people aspect of it. And furthermore, what are the controls that we put in place to protect those critical assets, right? So the resilience of a data center must take it into consideration. How can I build enough redundancy, right, by design and by implementation into these data centers? So let's start from what I call the perimeter, from the outside to the inside, right? Let's start with a feed, right, with the energy. Perhaps one energy source is good enough, but if you lose that energy source, your data center will probably, go down. And therefore, you need a dual or a redundant power source. Whether that is going to be a second feed, or most cases today we use a set of generators to power these data centers, naturally your second source of power. So you must build that a capability in the electrical side. And by the way, when we say redundancy, we're practically talking about a two-end situation where everything you have it twice. When one side fails, the other one takes over the load. There are, of course, other ways to maintain some redundancy, but ultimately what most data centers do today is to maintain what we call this two-end type of resiliency. We need to look at the mechanical side, right? So how do we cool these systems? These are really, really powerful systems, and they consume a lot of energy, and all of that energy is converted into heat. So how fast can we actually cool those systems? So we need to build enough redundancy in the mechanical gear, right? Whether we're going to do another 2N, as we call it, configuration, or whether we're going to do some other N plus one or N plus two configuration, that's usually by design. And we discuss this based on the requirements. But we also need to build that necessary configuration. We need to build that resiliency into the mechanical system. And of course, when we actually add the gear, the IT gear inside, we need to make sure that, you know, they get dual feeds from the power, they get enough cooling capacity in the data center. They have all of the necessary controls for fire detection and protection. And of course, to build what we call the cybersecurity fence around these systems. And the cybersecurity fence is actually very important, because you are not only protecting the IT gear, you must protect now the entire facility from the critical infrastructure as well. Because as it has been demonstrated for the last, I would say, 20 years that I've been in the industry of cybersecurity and as a mechanical engineer in the data center industry, we've been able to take down systems, critical infrastructure, from the internet, right? With remote, with very little, or let's say almost absent, or not absent, but almost very little, I would say, access to the network. So that resilience needs to take into consideration the IT and the critical infrastructure. I know I said a lot.
No. This is what you do for a living. So I am not surprised. You can pretty much keep talking on this, and it is very valuable information that you're sharing. So, Spiros, let's say I'm listening to you. I'm thinking of either investing in having our own data center or renting a space. So when I'm making these kinds of calls, how should I be thinking? Does that question make sense?
Oh, it does. And there is obviously a very low list of criteria that one must evaluate against the facilities that they are considering, whether it's they're going to build their own or they're going to use some colocation facility. But at the end of the day, it comes down to what are your business and technology requirements for your organization. That is the primary step one organization must do to understand what is the level of criticality for their technology? How do they use that technology? If, for example, you are a very small operation and you rely very little on the technology, you may not need the levels of resiliency that other bigger organizations need, right? In the age of digital today, I think more and more companies will naturally see that there is a need and heavy reliance on technology, right? But I'm giving that as a probably one extreme example, that you may not necessarily have all the needs for a very, you know, critical facility. However, I would say the majority of the organizations today heavily rely on some presence on the internet. And therefore, they need to understand first, what is the business impact of the absence of their operations from the internet? And therefore, they need to evaluate different options. Should they build their own? Right. And what is it cost effective for them to build their own? Right. That depends on the size. That depends on the subject. So that is one of the options. The second one is maybe we should be hosted, you know, with a very large colocation provider. And when you evaluate that colocation provider, they must meet your, you know, business requirements that you have set, the amount of availability, the type of SLAs you want. You know, what do they do? What does the colocation provider or the operator often called is going to do in case of data privacy and protection incidents, right? How do they protect the critical infrastructure? They need to demonstrate all of this to you, obviously without revealing their internal IP, but they need to demonstrate what sort of controls and protection elements they have placed within their facility, right? So there is a very long list that looks into, you know, again, the operational, the technical, and even the commercial, because commercial sometimes, you know, includes SLA agreements, etc. that they must evaluate whether they're going to use, they're going to build their own facility, right? And how they're going to do that by design and implementation, and whether they're going to go with a colocation provider.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you kept emphasizing a very long list, but that speaks to the importance of doing the due diligence and being very thorough, because, you know, the heart of your infrastructure, heart of your operations are these data centers. So you have to make sure that they are run as safely, as robustly, as securely, as reliably as possible. So therefore, whether the organization decides to have their own so they can establish control, establish close monitoring, or if they choose to rent, go with a service provider, even then, there needs to be significant oversight, needs to be significant monitoring. There's a lot of good practices out there, recommended good practices out there. But as a rule of thumb, if you had to share a few things that an organization needs to do on a regular basis to check on the effectiveness of the data center, what would they be?
So our methodology is to go through what I think I mentioned earlier on, and we look at the different risk factors that may have an impact on the facility itself. Whether it is your own or whether it is being hosted, you need to evaluate and you need to measure the impact of different risks. And that is, these are geological risks, meteorological risks, and human, whether accidental or unintentional. And let me give you a few examples, right? Very recently, by the way, I was doing a similar exercise for a very large enterprise company here in the state of Georgia, right? And we went through a very long list of items. I will not use this exhaustive list, but I will give you some examples. So we evaluated these facilities in terms of how close are they to airport and their runway extensions, right? How close are they to potentially gas stations where there might be a risk of an explosion, right? How close are they to any, you know, hazmat storage facilities, right? Or interstate? Are they close to a floodplain? Are they close to military bases or nuclear power plants where they can be affected by, you know, again, intentional or unintentional? So we always look, there is a long list that has been set by standards such as, you know, the Uptime Institute and many other organizations. And we go and evaluate those facilities against those threats. And we say, you know what? This is a solid facility. It has been built, you know, with maintaining the necessary distances from these locations, or if they are close, you know, what sort of security controls they may have put in place to prevent, you know, damage. So we look at all of these elements and we say, okay, it's a good facility. You maintain your operations, or you might say, you know what, the risk of continuing your operations in that facility might be more than you can probably, you know, handle as an organization. So all of these elements are what we measure our organizations or our client organizations. Now, furthermore, we go and look at not just the geological, meteorological, we also look at human intentional. And that is actually very critical. Human intentional can be cyber warfare. More often than not these days, we experience a lot of cyber warfare incidents coming from, you know, adversaries, international adversaries. No need to mention names, but we all know, you know, where they come from. So we also evaluate those facilities based on, you know, do they have the necessary cyber defense? Do they have all of the firewalls and the perimeter zones secure enough to withstand, you know, attacks on the critical facility? Very recently, I think it was about a year ago, when the San Francisco Water Authority, maybe a little bit over than a year, San Francisco Water Authority experienced a cyber attack. On the critical infrastructure. The Colonial Pipeline, about 2 years ago, they also faced an attack on the critical infrastructure. These are all of the elements that we must evaluate and we continuously monitor periodically, sometimes every 6 months, every 1 year, depending on it's a kind of pre-agreed frequency. So we always need to monitor all of these elements to make sure that, yes, the facility does take into consideration all of the controls and, I'm sorry, the threats, and they have put all of the necessary controls in place to make sure that they can withstand most of these threats.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's so true. And I almost feel that great organizations that believe in a high level of preparedness, will also have in place some measures that they will use to assess the resiliency of their data centers and closely monitor the measures. And if they find that the numbers are not looking that great, they would immediately take action, swing into action. That reminds me of one incident many years ago when this company had outsourced their technology operations to a service provider, and the service provider was hosting all the servers in their data center, and they had promised 24/7 access. But unfortunately, when this company's systems were hit by a distributed denial of service attack, and it was happened around 4 o'clock in the morning, the company officials, the senior technology person, the senior business person, they could not get in touch with the service provider, with the folks at the data center. Then one of the senior leadership personnel went to the data center and was held back by the security guard, wasn't allowed in. So they faced all kinds of challenges that were kind of unexpected because they assumed everything would be smooth, which is where some kind of a simulated exercise, some rehearsals, I don't know if tabletops work here, but you got to do some checks from time to time to make sure that what the vendor has promised or is promised is actually going to happen when disaster strikes. What are your thoughts?
The tabletops are a good enough to make sure that, you know, certain documentation is kept up to date. People are informed to make sure that, you know, certain procedures have been updated because, you know, I think I said earlier on, the data center is a living organism. As the data center infrastructure changes, the necessary documentation that goes with it must be updated. So tabletop exercises make sure that we practically have the capability and the process to update that documentation. But nothing beats an on-site visit. A few months ago, I was in Asia visiting a few facilities in two, three different countries. Next month, I'm actually doing on-site, not necessarily a surprise visit, but I'm visiting again another couple of other countries to do these on-site type of evaluations. You actually have a much better understanding of how the operations are happening. And you kind of pick, you know, I've also held a role as an auditor in the past, right? So you look at for the things that stand out, right? And you're not going there as an interrogator. You're going there mostly as, okay, show me that this control actually works, right? And when it doesn't, you say, okay, there is a deficiency here. Let's correct this, right? So nothing beats an on-site visit, whether you're going to do the IT infrastructure, whether you're going to do the, you know, the cybersecurity infrastructure, whether you're going to do the critical infrastructure. You must absolutely tactical periods, right? And, you know, visit those locations. So I think that's what we do as an organization. That's what our clients expect from us to do as well, because there are always new attack, you know, methods of attack. There are always new ways of tricking the systems. So having presence, being present, being able to really look at what is happening within the facility, that's really, I think, it's absolutely paramount.
Absolutely. Totally agree. In fact, you know, as you were talking about that you have sometimes played the role of an auditor, it brings to mind when we are buying a house and we want to make sure that there is construction integrity and other things, we like to hire our own inspectors to do the assessment instead of relying on the builders. Along similar lines, in this world of data centers, when an organization wants to ensure that they are, you know, signing up with a very credible, reliable place, I'm assuming such services are available in where you can hire an independent appraiser to review and provide a report.
We do not call them appraisers, to be honest, although there is a function of an appraiser. This is usually mostly for the commercial due diligence when there is a potential merger and acquisition. What you're referring to, there are actually two major roles relevant to what you just described. The first one is once you have designed and implemented the facility, we go what we call the commissioning phase. And the commissioning phase is a very thorough step-by-step procedure to test all of the elements that have been installed inside the facility. So you look at individual systems, individual components, you look at the functionality, you look at the whole system integrate as an integrated function, and you test, you know, how well it is performing with failover mechanisms, etc. So yes, the commissioning is something that no data center operator is actually going to power the system without having done the commissioning phase. And our organization is probably one of perhaps the top organization, you know, when it comes to the commissioning. The second one is assuming that the data center has been in operation and it's changing hands. So somebody else is coming in and to evaluate the facility. So yes, they can hire organizations like us to be the independent auditor. And we go through what we call the technical, commercial, and operational due diligence. So we look at the entire technology infrastructure and how it is being from the design to the operations. Because again, the data center is a living organism and many people, what they operate is not necessarily what they've designed. So we cross match and say, what are the changes that they have come and they may have happened and if they are reflected on the documentation, right? We also look at the operations, you know, how people operate. What are the SLAs with third parties? Do they have service partners for the critical equipment, the switchgear, the UPS, the batteries, the cooling systems, chilled water towers, right? And of course, the IT gear itself. And we also look at we also look at SLAs as well. You know, do they meet the SLAs? Have there been any misses on the SLAs themselves? We also do commercial, but I don't think that's the subject of this discussion. We look at P&Ls as well, but not necessarily something that we need to expand for this. But yes, absolutely paramount to look at the entire technology stack as well as the operational levels within the facility. And that's what our organization does effectively.
Good to hear. So, Spyrios, another thing I wanted to chat with you about was this adaptive design. You know, like everything, I'm sure data center design, data center technologies are evolving. Where are we these days from the standpoint of state-of-the-art data centers?
The biggest challenge that the majority of these data centers operators face today is the energy, right? We do not generate enough energy and we cannot distribute energy enough to power all of these facilities. So the one element, the function to solve for is access to the energy, right? The hybrid design practically means how can we use alternative sources of energy outside the municipal grid or grid altogether and use those renewable energies or in general, other sources of energy in collaboration or in conjunction with the grid. So this hybrid type of designs must look at how can I use, let's say, green hydrogen, or how can I use sources such as wind farms or solar farms or any other type of energy source outside the grid. And that is a big equation, right? There's no two solutions are correct. Right now, the majority of the organizations ourselves, we're trying to solve for the type of different designs that we can practically accommodate for such energy needs. We're currently working with a few operators to say, can I use wind farms in collaboration with, you know, the grid? Can I use solar or hydro in collaboration with the grid? So the hybrid design in general is really all about building the necessary critical infrastructure that capitalizes on multiple sources of energy.
Yeah, makes sense. So, you know, talking about energy and talking about renewable sources of energy, talking about green IT, you know, we hear about data centers being located on ships, being located underwater. You know, can you shed some light on these different, you know, types of locations, arrangements?
Organizations will not stop innovating and they will always look for ways to ultimately advance the technology. A very large cloud service provider in the old days, you know, built a data center facility on a very large ship, right? And it toured the world and did quite a few, innovative work. And, you know, they collected data, mostly weather data, if I remember correctly. And they did a lot of work like this. And, you know, witnessed another cloud service provider that they did an immersible data center within a very large, you know, tank. Companies will do innovation, will drive innovation. They some of them are cash rich and they want to do this, right? It drives forward thinking. But it doesn't necessarily mean that all of these solutions or all of these designs are sustainable. It doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, you know what, in the future, we're going to have 10, 15, 20 facilities underwater, right? We do get studies from these. We do understand how systems and data centers facilities operate, right? We want to understand, because of the climate change, how we can move to different elements, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know what, all of a sudden, there are going to be 20 data centers on ships. There's going to be another 20 data centers underwater. But again, they do serve a very specific purpose. They might collect data and you want that data to be as close to the source, right? You want to explore, you know, what Star Trek, you know, promised to do, right? You know, go beyond boundaries. So people want to do that. Organization must do this. They should continue. But again, not all of these facilities are going to be sustainable, or, you know, they will maintain or they will stay, you know, or will be adapted to very large numbers.
Thank you. Thank you for enlightening us on that topic. So we are kind of coming to the close of our discussion. This is a fascinating discussion. I wish we could go on. But as we start wrapping up things, Spyros, based on what you shared, if I could summarize some of the best practices, that would include scalable infrastructure, redundancy at every level, efficient cooling systems, renewable energy integration, automated failover, employee training, and the list goes on. I turn it back to you. As you start concluding this episode, what would you like some takeaways to be for the listeners?
The data center market today is swamped by professionals and by newcomers who, you know, they all want to have a piece of that large pie. I encourage people who are building critical infrastructure, who are relying on their IT to be hosted at a data center facility, to get involved with the professionals that they have really, really strong presence and they have really good understanding of what is out there in the industry. Now, of course, you can learn, you know, with what we call the hands-on, but because of the criticality of the data center facility, you probably want to start your assessment. You probably need to do your work with the ones that who have been out there in the industry. They have very large exposure. They have done this part of the work for a very, you know, for some time now. So yeah, getting involved with the professionals and the ones that have been long time is absolutely paramount. Secondly, educate yourselves. You will not believe how many events are actually happening in the data center industry. Last week was another one, was one in New York. Tomorrow there's one in downtown Atlanta. The week after is probably another one in Houston. Educate. They are not very expensive to join. Some of them are actually, you know, they would welcome people with no fees whatsoever. Just go and look at what is happening in the data center industry altogether. So education awareness is absolutely paramount. And that is probably one of our faults as well. Data centers today are considered to be the naughty neighbors. I mean, they say, oh, they're energy consuming. They take our water, they take our power. We as a data center industry, we need to educate our communities. We need to tell them what is it that we do. And of course, we need to make sure that we build them in a sustainable way. We use renewables, you know, we become community friendly. All of that must happen. So these are my top two recommendations that I would encourage, you know, listeners to do.
Spyros, it's been truly a pleasure. Thank you again for your time. And I look forward to more discussions on this topic in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
A special thanks to Spyros Liolis for his time and insights. If you like what you heard, please leave the podcast a rating and share it with your network. Also, subscribe to the show so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.
The information contained in this podcast is for general guidance only. The discussants assume no responsibility or liability for any errors or omissions in the content of this podcast. The information contained in this podcast is provided on an as-is basis with no guarantee of completeness, accuracy, usefulness, or timeliness. The opinions and recommendations expressed in this podcast are those of the discussants and not of any organization.